The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
The Nooshigak is a little ahead, and the Naknek Kwee-Jack is a little behind. And this is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report for Monday, June 27th. I'm Dave Benninger. Molly Dishtern will be back Wednesday. Tonight, the Fisheries Research Institute tells us what they think about the coming run with the bigger catches at Port Moeller.
This means that the front end of that run into Bristol Bay is likely a bit later than average, and unlikely to arrive inshore given average travel time until June 29th or so.
Plus, in the back half of the show, we'll discuss the choice to upgrade to RSW on one skipper's pretty small wooden boat.
In parts, the investment is about $15,000 with a hydraulic pump that was given to me, and then 80 hours of labor.
Those stories are coming up. First, a rundown of some of the day's data. Catch an escapement through yesterday. Ugashik District catch confidential on account of the buyers. Cumulative catch, 104,600. Escapement Sunday, 4,500 sockeye. In river estimate, 20,000. Total run, 130,000. Catch in the Igigik District Sunday, 116,000 sockeye. Cumulative now, 480,000. Escapement to the Igigik River was 8,200. Cumulative, 262,500 with an in river estimate of 15,000 fish. Naknek Kwee-Jack still slow, no catch. Cumulative catch in the district, 22,200 fish. Escapement on Sunday in the Kwee-Jack River, 2,500. Cumulative, 10,300. Naknek River escapement Sunday, 6,000. Cumulative, 57,000. Nooshigak District, pretty good catch yesterday, 223,000. Cumulative for Nooshigak District, 700,000. Escapement by river, Agushik River, 2,300 past the tower, cumulative 10,000 on the season. Nooshigak River Reds, 10,000 yesterday, cumulative 182,000. Wood River escapement yesterday, 11,000, cumulative 196,000 on the season. Togiak District, no fishing a Sunday. Total catch so far this season, 5,400, with no escapement counted yet. Bristol Bay total harvest on Sunday, 339,000 fish, cumulative now 1.3 million. Total run to Bristol Bay now 2,075,700 sockeye. Vessel and permit registration as of about 4 p.m. today. Igigik District, 396 permits on 311 vessels, expected to go to 404 permits in 48 hours. Ugashik District, 229 permits on 175 vessels, climbing to 234 in 48 hours. Naknek Kwee-Jack, 304 permits on 262 vessels, climbing to 308 in 48 hours. Nooshigak District, 510 permits on 391 vessels, staying the same. And Togiak, 28 permits registered to fish on 28 vessels. Port Moeller Test Fishery released some catch data just minutes ago. We'll run down the raw numbers here. Station 2 fish today, just one fish caught in the 4.5-inch mesh. Station 4 fish today, 36 fish caught. Station 6, 14. Station 8, 34. Station 10, 13. Station 12, just one fish caught. Total of 99 on the day, 61 in the 4.5 and 38 in the 5 1/8-inch mesh. Analysis from Dr. Scott Rayborn coming up in a moment. Looking out a little bit further, Area M still fishing pretty well there. Sockeye catch from yesterday, 134,700, bringing their season total to 1.4 million sockeye harvested. Another 194,000 pinks were caught Sunday in Area M fisheries. They're just about 2 million pinks there on the season. Some fishing happening now. Port Mueller to outer Port Hyden. They've landed a total of 192,000 sockeye. Well, the Port Mueller numbers from today, as well as an age composition breakdown, were issued a little bit late for this broadcast, so we'll have more on that in our morning news. Last night, Port Mueller test fishery data analyst Scott Rayborn put out an analysis of the catches he's seen through Sunday.
This is Scott Rayborn from the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute. For our third interpretation of Port Mueller data this year, the daily catch index indicates the run has been building at Port Mueller since June 21st. Across days, the pattern thus far is closest to that from 2015, which turned out to be 4 days late. Station-specific catches show the run is predominantly distributed closer to shore this year, which means the fishing transect is likely intercepting a larger portion of the run compared to other years, when catches were relatively greater at the outer stations. Hopefully this means the daily catch index will correlate better with what shows up inshore. Although catch and escapement dropped off yesterday and the day before, dates June 24th and 25th, we are forecasting things should pick up in the coming days through July 1st. At this time, we are unable to forecast the year in total run because we do not know what catches at Port Mueller will look like from here on out. If today was the peak at Port Mueller, then the run is likely 1 to 2 days early. As indicated in previous years, anything could happen with the daily catch index from this point forward. The genetic results from June 21 and 22 samples showed a strong representation of egret fish, as one might expect given its slightly earlier average run timing than other stocks and forecasted run strength. The proportion of North Peninsula fish was greater than previous years for this point in the season, but we caution against inferring too much from a single genetic sample. The next set of tissue samples are due to arrive in the gene lab on Monday afternoon. These will represent catches from June 23 and June 25 and 26. The in-season stock composition estimates from Port Mueller represent catches across the entire transect. We have received many inquiries regarding what stock compositions are for each station. Unfortunately, we do not have enough fish to provide station-specific estimates for each trip. In previous years, the gene lab has pooled samples across dates provide station-specific estimates over broader time periods. In general, Ugashic fish pass mostly through the interstations. While other stocks are more broadly distributed across the transect, Egagic tends to be skewed shoreward, and the west side stocks more towards the outer stations.
Dr. Scott Rayborn, data analyst with the Port Mueller Test Fishery. This is KDLG, back in a moment.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by Naknek Family Fisheries, 246-FISH, or on the web at naknekfish.com.
You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. It's Monday, June 27th. Wherever you're listening from tonight, we're glad to have you tuned in. How is this year's run taking shape, other than a little slowly? Well, for more on that, I'm joined by Curry Cunningham from the University of Washington's Fisheries Research Institute, who is beating the heat up at the camp on the south shore of Lake Elecnagik. Good, as always, to talk with you, Curry. How's things up at the lake?
It's another beautiful day up here at the lake.
All right, so FRI does, it's for decades, has kept track of data, catch and escapement data, and plugged its own numbers and such. What are you seeing right now? What you've offered daily updates. What do you see?
Well, what we do in season is we try to make the most of the information that's available. The catch and escapement data, the age composition data, obviously the catches out at Port Mueller. And as the season progresses, we use those different sources of information in proportion to how well, historically, they have been able to predict end-of-season run size. So at the beginning of the season, we base our predictions on the preseason forecast. We have some information from Port Mueller as the season progresses. And by the end of the season, catch and escapement basically tell the story. You know, we've noticed a few things out here, as I'm sure you all have as well. Early on, catches out of Port Mueller were fairly slow. Up through about the 21st. After that, they picked up a bit, with catches on the 25th and 26th being substantially higher. This means that the front end of that run into Bristol Bay is likely a bit later than average, and unlikely to arrive inshore given average travel time until June 29th or so.
All right. I'm looking at your catch and escapement graphs, which is kind of a nice thing to do for folks, but our listeners out on the boats won't be able to see these. As I look at 2016, what's plotted so far, it looks an awful lot like 2015. It does not look like 14 or 13. Do you see the same thing? Are we shaping up a little bit like last year?
Well, yes. One of the things we do in season is to look at what we expect to see in terms of a cumulative catch and escapement through each day of the season relative to what we would expect given preseason forecast by district and baywide and average travel time and run, average arrival date and run compression. You know, at the district level right now, Ugashik and Nushagak seem to be a bit ahead of where we would expect them, Igigik and Naknek-Quejek a bit behind. But certainly not out of the realm of possibility for the preseason forecast if the runs are, say, 2 or 3 days late. What we do know is last year, obviously, a very large and late run, the latest run since 1971. And what we saw is that catches, daily catch and escapement, got up into the million-plus fish range by about the 30th. We'd like to see that again this year if we're going to be on track with the preseason forecast.
Okay, in the million-plus range by the 30th.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me what you see with the temperatures that are being recorded around the bay and at Port Moeller. Does that play into what you're looking at all?
To some extent. We've looked quite a bit at temperature, the relationship between temperatures out there and the distribution of fish along the transect. The other thing we know from 2015, a warm year, and fish far out on the end of the transect. But at the same time, there doesn't really seem to be a discernible relationship between temperature and at least the distribution of fish.
Okay. All right. Another thing that I think people remembered last year was eventually Port Moeller had fish in the nets across their transect.
Mm-hmm.
Those fish did not show up as inshore escapement or inshore catch for a mysteriously long amount of time. And there was kind of this idea, is it a bust? How do we translate the numbers at Port Moeller better? What the case was, just this little mystery. And I remember the theory that I kept hearing quite a bit was that the fish were balled up somewhere out there in the district waiting on some sort of either turn in the weather or what have you to suddenly bolt for their tributaries. Do you think we might be seeing anything like that this year, or is it too early to tell?
It's a little bit early to tell. What we do know is that obviously the catches have been slow at least through the 21st, picked up a bit, and then 25th and 26th we really saw higher catches out there. We do know that catch efficiency out at the Port Moeller transect varies from year to year, and that's going to influence what we call the run per index, or the number of fish arriving inshore per fish caught in the test fishery. That bounces around from year to year. And some of that has to do with weather. Some of it has potentially to do with the size of the fish. We don't really know. Certainly, lower catch rates in a year like this year could be related to an inshore run that's on time or slightly later than average. But in reality, if travel times are extremely long, you know, we don't expect that pulse of fish that came through on the 25th to 26th to be arriving much before the end of June.
What will you be watching for in the next couple of days to this week ahead? One thing that, you know, just seems kind of frustrating is that the weather seems very flat, calm, and warm, which I gather doesn't move the fish a whole lot. But what will you be watching for to see if these projections of some million catch days coming up by the end of the month here are in store?
I'm going to be watching the Port Moeller catches very closely over the next week. What we would like to see is the catch rate out there continue to increase and remain high. What I would hope not to see is catch rates at Port Moeller to go up and then see a pronounced decline at or near the usual peak in Port Moeller around July 28th. That would suggest that the run is not, in fact, late and smaller than forecast. If we see increasing catch rate out there and sustained catches, that is definitely a positive sign that the run may be later than average, much like 2015 and on track to the preseason forecast.
All right, Curry, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we appreciate your participation here on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you very much for your time.
Support comes from Crowley. Fueling Alaska for more than 60 years, Crowley supports local fisheries onshore and off with a full range of commercial marine fuel products and Bristol Bay floater fueling services. More information at crowleyfuels.com.
Regular listeners have heard Bob King on this program on behalf of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association promoting the delivery of chilled sockeye. There have been many efforts and much money spent on getting more ice in the bins or RSW systems installed, but Bristol Bay still has a hard time beating back the reputation of volume first, quality second. BBRSDA is just one of the entities driving and funding the quality initiatives by supporting ice barges and helping cover costs to processors who supply more ice for their fleets. Last year, it ran a chilling survey both online and at the expo in Seattle. 75% of the respondents, according to the RSDA, chilled their fish with RSW. Three-quarters of those who say they do chill with RSW had never chilled before. Most of them said they were happy with their systems, except that it didn't get watered down cold enough, fast enough, on these warm summers. Those were according to responses to the RSDA's survey. This summer, the RSDA had a two-person team making their way around boatyards. Cooper Kearns was one of the two, talking to skippers who chill their catch and some of the roughly 20% of the fleet who don't.
We've definitely ran into a few fishermen who are content with the way of doing with the status quo, with the way they've always done things, and they say, "Our processor doesn't require it, and we're not gonna bother," and they're happy with the product that they deliver.
Installing refrigerated seawater systems seems to be the direction the bay is heading, but RSW is far from a perfect solution. It's costly up front and probably doesn't chill water as fast as good icy brine in the holds.
Right, icing is pretty widely promoted by all the processors I've talked to, and I think it does a better job than the RSW systems. Issue there is that the ice isn't always available. And it is also, there's a time constraint when the openers are back-to-back-to-back. People want to focus on fishing as opposed to having to go collect ice. And I think the RSW just does a better job of allowing the fishermen to focus on fishing.
And because that ice is not always available and supporting the ice barges is costly, more and more boats are adding RSW every year. And as the survey showed, the skippers seem to be mostly content with them. But Kern's outreach team was hearing two primary reasons why more boats aren't installing them.
Sounds like money is an issue, or at least they don't know exactly how to finance it. Another concern is size. With a lot of the older boats, they just don't have enough room on board to install one of these systems, and it's just a matter of getting creative and finding a pocket for that system.
Which brings us to David Jennings, skipper of the aging boat Red Man, which he didn't name.
It's a 1958 Bumblebee built in Astoria, Oregon. I think it's the oldest boat in the fleet.
It's 32 feet, but what's our width?
9 feet, 8 inches. Pretty small.
Pretty small and wooden in a bay without many wood vessels left.
There aren't. I think maybe a dozen wooden boats, and a lot of them are pretty tired. And yeah, maybe 10% of the fleet at best.
Jennings put in RSW this year on the small old wooden boat. Before we get to more of that, he shared a little of his thinking why he did it.
I've always wanted to get reefer on the boat, and I did ice last year to get that extra 15 cents. And you can't go wrong right now with the fish price so low. You need that extra 15 cents. Sometimes it's the only profit you have.
So why would a skipper like Jennings with a 58-year-old wooden boat not just stick with ice?
Honestly, I believe that ice is a better chilled fish and when they're floating in the ice. But the availability in the bay, and especially where I fish at Johnson Hill, it's just not feasible to have ice out there. The canneries don't put it on the tenders, and to have to run back to the river against the tide and then run back against the tide to Johnson Hill in an old slow boat, it's not worth it.
So Jennings, who is a shipwright down south and knows a thing or two about working on wooden boats, made the choice to put in one of IMS's smallest RSW systems, using his slush bags with a sump to hold the chilled water. All with that 15 cent per pound bonus in mind, which, when fish prices are at 50 cents, can prove a huge incentive for the upfront costs and labor.
So, in parts, the investment is about $15,000 with a hydraulic pump that was given to me. It doesn't take much power to turn these little ones. And then labor, it's hard to say. This boat, I've already set it up preparing for RSWs, so I'll probably have 80 hours of labor to put the whole system in.
Now it's in, and it's ready to chill some salmon during what's proving to be another warm Bristol Bay summer. Jennings says if his boat can, well...
No matter what the size of your boat, this is definitely on the small side for size for any of them in the bay, and you can squeeze it in. You might have to give a little bit of comfort up or lose just maybe one fish hold, but it's possible in just about any boat.
What he's not sure of is if there's enough skilled labor to put more systems in all the boats in the bay that need them, and if that might not prove to be a limiting economic factor.
But, I don't know, a little bit of education, maybe some more advisory roles for those skilled people and the fishermen putting more of their own sweat equity into it, it can bring the price down and provide chilled fish for the fleet.
And then there's that other thing, which is, while a lot of drift and set netters and a lot of buyers are heading in a more quality-focused direction and putting a lot of work into that, is it too little too late?
I think we're closing the gate after the horses got out a bit, because Bristol Bay already has the reputation of volume and not quality. So it's a hard blemish to smear off of your face. But I do believe that getting everyone refrigerated and producing consistent quality fish can only bring the price up.
Back in a moment. Just about out of time for tonight. Let's take a quick look at the marine weather forecast in Bristol Bay. West winds of 10 knots, seas at just a foot. Tomorrow, variable winds less than 10, becoming east 10 in the afternoon, seas still at just a foot. And Tuesday night, east winds 10 knots, seas at 1. From Port Hyde to Cape Sarachev, tonight, variable winds 10 knots, seas 2. Tomorrow, southeast 15, seas 2. Tomorrow night, southeast 20, seas 3. No letters in our mailbag tonight, and we'll bring you more on other seafood news and sports news tomorrow. We're out of time for tonight. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report for June 27th. I'm Dave Benninger. Good night.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report was made possible in part by the Bristol Bay Fisheries Association, advocating for fishermen. More information at bristolbayfishermen.org.